Recorded on location at Aspen Ideas Health in Aspen, Colorado.
In President Biden's most recent State of the Union address, he said to the country,
"We owe it to ourselves to keep supporting our new health research agency called ARPA-H. And remind us that we can do big things, like end cancer as we know it, and we will."
How can we pursue some of these breakthroughs in our case for health by empowering the scientists, the program managers that have these really big ideas that are so risky that the technical sector, the private sector can't address because there's no proof of concept?
Our guest is the person leading the ARPA initiative. She holds a PhD and has lots of goals to meet. Renee Wegerson is the director of the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health. We're on location at Aspen Ideas Health, and this is Conversations on Healthcare.
Renee, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you very much. So excited to be here.
And, you know, it's so great to see you here at Aspen Ideas Health. We connected 12 months ago, and a lot's been going on. And we'd love to hear sort of an update and an overview. And I really sort of love this model of, you know, identifying and empowering scientists and also incenting them. It was very powerful design that's the president came up with in Congress. Tell us more.
Yeah, so when we met last year, I was still really fresh, new on the job.
That's right.
We were just getting started. President Biden did launch ARPA-H in March of 2022. I was sworn in October of 2022 to create a brand new agency. I still think I have the title for newest federal agency, and really modeled after the DARPA business model that was launched originally by President Eisenhower. And the idea there being, how can we pursue some of these breakthroughs in our case for health by empowering the scientists, the program managers that have these really big ideas that are so risky that the technical sector, the private sector can't address because there's no proof of concept. And it's also not the right place for other parts of government that is more curiosity-driven research. We're really problem-focused. And so that's really what the agency is we hire these program managers with their big ideas, in our case in health, and we give them 3 years to sprint at that problem. Another way to say that is every 2 weeks that goes by, 1% of their time is up. Mm. So they bring a sense of urgency to solving those problems. And we also give them the resources to really focus on just the technical risk. And we make sure that they have the resources, that the execution risk, the right team is in place to catalyze the entire ecosystem. If we get to those proofs of concept, maybe we're the first funder, but then somebody else can be the second funder after our investments.
What was the total funding that you started out with?
So our initial appropriation was $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And for the last 2 years since then, we've had another $1.5 billion per year appropriation. So this year was a flat year. I'd love to continue to grow because that gives us more shots on goal. But it's been, you know, a really healthy start for us in terms of resources to get those programs started.
Well, it is not often, as we said a year ago, that an opportunity like this comes along. A new federal agency, only $1 billion to get started. That's darn good to get started. But we'd love to pick up on what President Biden said about trying to end cancer. And I know your agency has launched 4 transformational cancer-related programs, several projects committed to tackling the disease at every angle, from diagnostics to prevention. So I know that people would be very interested in hearing about this. Give us an overview.
Yeah, so ARPA-H is actually kind of born initially out of some of those ideas, I think, from Cancer Moonshot. So when President Biden was vice president, obviously he had the tragedy of losing his son, Beau, to cancer, and really struggled, even how well-positioned he was and how well-resourced he was. There still were so many challenges, everything from the medical records, of course, down to the therapeutics and diagnostics that were a huge challenge. And so he was inspired at the time to launch Cancer Moonshot to really, really tackle some of these biggest challenges in cancer. And so with ARPA-H, when he became president, it's really, what is the agency for moonshots for all diseases? We do address cancer and moonshot goals, but we are disease agnostic, actually. So the investments that we've made in cancer range from our precision surgical interventions program, which, you know, think about reimagining the operating room suites. When a surgeon is looking into a surgical cavity, trying to remove a tumor. Right now, the way that it's done is as the tumor is removed, there's also slices taken because tumor tissue looks like healthy tissue. A pathologist has to run down the hall and look and say, you know, have you gotten all the tumor or not? Are you within the tumor margin? That is really inefficient, and that's not every hospital can do that. So this program is trying to reimagine just the imaging tools. So think about the reagents that help us see those tumor margins, even augmented visualization by the surgeon, him or herself, all the way to the robotics that will help us do that with this incredible precision. Importantly, making it so that we can do this in the best academic centers in the country, but also in a rural setting where staff might not be trained in some of the cancer center expertise. And that's really one of those big investments. You can see how we tackle that whole program. We have a what if question that goes with each one of our investments. And so for that precision surgical interventions program, it's what if cancer surgeries were one and done? And so that's really the goal by the end of that effort.
Great question.
Yeah. And what about another what if that we have for cancer is what if clinical trials adapted and evolved in the way that tumors do. So many patients, unfortunately, will be initially responsive to a chemotherapy, let's say, and then become resistant to it, and they're no longer effective, and they have to look for a new drug. And this is really a struggle, of course, in that cancer ecosystem. And so the ADAPT program is really intended to understand and discover some of the biomarkers and the signals that are some of those early signs that something is changing and a patient may no longer be responsive, and then teeing them up to be aligned to the best next new therapeutic. So you evolve the course of treatment in real time, initially keeping pace and then ultimately outpacing that cancer. So those are some of the two biggest ones.
Wonderful.
And you're not thinking about all of that from Washington. You now have hubs in Cambridge, and just, I think, one recently opened in Dallas. Is that?
That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
And how do those operate?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is when we got our authorities that allow us to kind of move nimbly in this new business model, Congress also said, ARPA-H, thou shalt be in three geographies and really let us pick what we were going to do. And so rather than pick three cities that represent the healthcare burden in the United States, it'd be impossible to pick three cities that really reflected that. We said, we're going to compete this, and we're going to ask cities, you know, we want to understand where are the hubs that help us actually transition our capabilities into the real world, but also recruit all 50 states to be party to this, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to only have three sites. So those hubs are focused on our stakeholders and operations hub in Washington, D.C. This is where we're close to FDA and Congress and NIH, others that are important to us. And Boston, Massachusetts, Cambridge, I should say, excuse me. Cambridge is not Boston. They've made very clear to me. Cambridge won our investor catalyst hub. So as I mentioned, we're initially the first investor, but not the second always. So we want to keep those investors close, understand what we need to de-risk so that they can be the next funder. And then last but not least, Dallas won our customer experience hub. So one of the failures of federal funding for healthcare has been a lot of innovation happens in the lab, but in isolation. So a patient, a healthcare provider aren't involved and providing their opinion of would I use this tool or this technology in the surgical program I just described. We need to make sure surgeons are giving us feedback. Would you bring this into your work stream? So out of Dallas, we have that customer experience hub to help us recruit clinical trials, but also patients and healthcare providers.
Well, I think with each question we ask, I have the same thought, which is you have the world's most interesting job. This is really, really
wonderful. It is
wonderful.
So much fun.
Groundbreaking compared to how things usually happen at the federal level. So we have lots more questions for you, though. We wanted to ask you about the $50 million program to enhance and automate cybersecurity for healthcare mm-hmm. facilities. And 6 months ago, we might not have picked that as a question for you. But when we think about what has happened and how much trauma it has wrought on the healthcare system and all who use it through the well-publicized cybersecurity attack on one of the biggest systems. Very important. So tell us what you're doing in this space.
Yeah, this is a upgrade is the program. It's a really interesting program focused on creating the cyber defenses for our healthcare systems. And so this was actually pretty astonishing to me coming from DARPA, where I had worked previously, where I mingled with program managers that were tip of the spear cyber for national security. It's really taken as such a priority. These are our most critical resources. We have to defend them. And coming to the health sector, I was surprised at how limited our defenses were. And so we have a first time that we have a dual-hatted program manager. He's half-time, actually he's part-time, not completely half, but at DARPA, and then spends some of his time at ARPA-H, bringing some of that expertise to help us extend those protections to the healthcare ecosystem. So that was recently just announced. He's now looking for performers that will be competing for those resources. He's also doing a challenge that we are doing in participation with DARPA for autonomous AI patching of vulnerabilities to critical infrastructure. And so what's really important about that is, attacks on infrastructure, a lot of companies, the industry doesn't have tools to protect. So even if we wanted to say, hey, big pharma companies, protect your assets, they don't necessarily have the tools. And so we want to create open source tools to protect our infrastructure, hospitals, pharma manufacturing, you name it. And there's going to be a competition this summer at DEF CON, which is a big hacker conference. A lot of these systems go down because of hackers. And so it's sort of reverse engineering that. How do we, in an autonomous manner, patch and defend against those attacks from hackers? And so for us, we're obviously focused on that healthcare infrastructure. DARPA is really interested in electronics grid and other infrastructure, transportation, et cetera, that might be impacted. So it's a really interesting way to work with other organizations within the government that can move at our pace, but also, really share those learnings. And so, before ARPA-H, there just absolutely was no program like that for healthcare, wow. Not in the private sector and not in the federal government. And so that's really the sweet spot that we need to look for with each and every effort that we launch.
Well, you're excited about a lot of things on the horizon. I know you're a supporter of artificial intelligence for replacing drug experiments on animals with more human-like technology models. Talk to us a little bit about that. And here at Aspen Ideas Health, we've also heard people who are thinking about predictive models with AI. In that long period of 10 years where things may not be happening, whether or not they can predict Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and the like. Lots going on in the AI space. Where are you focused and where are you trying to incent people to come up with innovations?
Yes, so we actually, on what you've just described, we don't yet have a program launched, but it's an area that we're very interested in making investments. The ADAPT program already starting to look at some of these early predictive tools that we can predict a patient who will be changing their responsiveness. But if you just really think about just drug discovery generally, if you break that down into just the initial drug discovery of the molecule, very difficult to predict which structures are going to have which effects, whether it's toxicity or pharmacokinetic behavior. But then also predicting how they behave in an animal model. Also turns out mice aren't humans. So, if some of these in silico models actually may be even better predictive than the animal models that we that we use and trust today. And then even predicting the outcome of a clinical trial. And so I think that we're really ripe for investments across all of those categories that I just described, that we can get better in predicting the outcomes using some of these AI capabilities and shorten those timelines from bringing drugs forward from years, not decades, to hopefully months or even weeks.
What's that process look like? $1 billion sounds like a lot, but it goes very quickly.
True. It goes very quickly.
And, what's the decision-making process?
So what are those proofs of concept? And I'll tell you, one of the biggest blockers that we have right now is just access to data. Mm-hmm. And so this is something, with every drug that is approved by the FDA, there's a small amount of the actual data that was generated around that molecule that's made available. And so there's been some really interesting work around that. But we really want to try to see, are there ways that we can incentivize the drug companies to share some of that that data in a pre-competitive way that everybody can benefit and understand if similar molecules that were used by others and that were not successful, that can really accelerate the pipeline. So we're really focused on I'm not convinced, at least, that we can be completely successful doing what you said, to that you know, prediction and shortening this time frame, unless we can get access to that data and really benefit everyone. And so what are those incentives that we can create, with pharma companies that would be really attractive and have them be interested in working with us on projects like this?
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the ARPA Sprint for Women's Health. This is something we were looking forward to hearing more about. It's a funding opportunity to address unmet challenges in women's health, championing transformative innovations around issues that particularly affect women. I understand you're committing $100 million to this effort. How's that going? What's fascinating to you in that project?
Yeah, so I told you that a lot of what we've launched here are either ideas from the outside or our program managers come up with them. This one, this was me being a year and a half into this agency, being a woman, and saying, why aren't we doing more in this area? We're not, this is an underfunded area generally. We didn't have a program manager in the pipeline who was really interested and focused on this. So I thought, I can't be the only one that's frustrated by this. So I asked my program managers, is anybody else frustrated by this and want to contribute? So from our existing team, we had 6 people raise their hand and said, yes, also frustrated. And so with that group, we did a lot of ideation sessions around what are topics that are uniquely kind of ready for an ARPA type of injection of capital to advance the state of the art. And so the topics that we've selected range from things like women's health at home. So thinking about how many women don't go to their annual appointments because they're taking care of the kids, or they're going grocery shopping, or they're at work, right? That's all of those apply to me, I know. And so how can we push more even sample collection into the home, or diagnostics, or therapeutics? So that's one of the calls of the solicitation that went out. Other areas focused even on new models. So, you know, women weren't included in clinical trials until the 90s.
Right.
There's female animals still aren't included in many preclinical studies still, which is a huge issue. Yes, like that disparity even exists at the level of the mice. And so not only do we have to look prospectively of how are we including women, but how are we even making up for that massive gap in data for decades of clinical trials and preclinical studies. So what are those in silico models of the future, but even potential organ-on-a-chip models of the future that would really help address here? I won't go through all 6 topics, but just to give you the idea of these very different topics, each that is sponsored by a program manager. And so I committed $100 million to this. And through our conversations, we also heard a lot of exciting ideas from small companies who, after we got all excited about their idea, they said, but we're never going to work with government because we're 5 people. We can't spend 2 months writing a big grant. It's just off the table for us. And so in a little bit of back and forth conversations, you know, what they're really good at is pitching venture, right? Which is a white paper and a pitch. You get 15 minutes maybe. So we restructured our pitch for Women's Health that we have a 3-pager white paper at the beginning. That's the submission. And then we've just recently down-selected our 30-minute pitches. So we're going to invite a group of them to pitch. And so we were so overwhelmed with the response that we got. So many small businesses applied. So 42% of the applicants are businesses of less than 10 people, which is really changing the dynamics of who's applying for this effort. 45 states and 34 countries applied. Wow. So really excited, but there's a story behind the story there. It's not just this sprint that I'm so excited about, but there's a massive market here that I am excited. Like, we're catalyzing something that is a snowball that's really ready for prime time, and I'm so excited that ARPA-H can play a role in starting to get that moving. But it is really a special moment in time there.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to pull the thread on your commitment to diversity, because you stress that all the time, and you have an example of ARPA-H launching a new program at the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. Talk a little bit about the program itself, and why did you choose to launch it at the Nation, and what other efforts are you making in terms of reaching out to diverse communities?
Yes. So every new program that launches at ARPA-H, we have to answer these Heilmeier questions, mm-hmm. right, that we've borrowed from DARPA, but we've also added our own. And so these are, you know, what's the problem you're trying to solve? How's it done today? What's new in your approach? How much will it cost? How long will it take? We've added questions. How are you going to address cost, accessibility, that customer experience, mm-hmm. but also trust and messaging? And so the program managers have to have a plan of how they're going to do this. So Ross Urich, who's the program manager of Nitro, which is this osteoarthritis program, you know, his commitment was when we launched this program, we were going to require that the clinical trial that comes at the end of the program will have to enroll a diverse cohort that is reflective of the actual demographics of disease. And for osteoarthritis, it's majority female, mm-hmm. But also a big preponderance of Native American population. And so we reached out to tribal nations and asked, you know, would you be interested in working with us on this? 5 years is a long time, but we need to learn how to be culturally respectful and work with you. And so not only did Ross kick off his program in Tahlequah in Oklahoma, it was really exciting to engage Cherokee Nation. And actually was there at the kickoff, and I asked the room of the teams that we're funding, you know, how many of you have ever, you know, been even to Oklahoma? And, right. you know, less than half the room had. So it's really, we really tried ARPA-H to get out into communities that they wouldn't normally be engaging, but generally, you know, have that be a partnership. And then how we're going to lock that in is on the back end of his program, because we have something called other transactions, we can really negotiate terms and conditions that are beneficial to the government, but also the parties that are proposing. And so what we've done is there's actually a 10-year period after the end of the program where the federal government can actually buy in bulk any successful cellular therapeutics that come out of this program to provide to communities that need it the most. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is no longer the you know, $3 million cell therapy that is coming out, you know, per dose that only very few of us, if any of us in this room, can afford it, and really trying to make sure that this is getting to those that need it the most. So innovation, not just in the technology, but even in the way that we do business.
Well, and it's another one of your diversity initiatives. I think that we've been following some of the leaders in the tribal nations about just the tremendous underrepresentation of Indigenous people in medicine and nursing and all the health professions. And to have this focus, really amazing. I think we just have to follow you every day and see what is new. So I want to touch on one that I know very little about, but sounded very important. An initiative looking at cell therapies for neuroinflammation and neurodegeneration to develop strategies for more effective tissue-specific delivery of therapies. And I took that straight from one of your papers because it's a complicated thing to describe. But this is a first for you, I understand, in the neurodegenerative conditions. Again, something all people worry about as time moves on. So how did that idea come out on top?
Yeah, so this is, I think you're talking about our CT Neuro effort. So this is an example of an idea that came from the outside. And so we do have an open solicitation that anybody who has a great idea can submit their idea across really any topic area. We'll entertain the idea. And if we're interested, start a conversation around that. And in this one in particular, it's really looking at some of the you know, toughest to reach parts of the body, like the brain, where I'm sure you've heard of the challenges of getting drugs across the blood-brain barrier and biologics and other medicines. And this one is really focused on migrating cells across the blood-brain barrier as a new way to deliver therapies for some of the most challenging cancers, as an example. And so I'm not as close to that effort, but this is an example of you know, one of those big ideas that is pretty risky if you think about you know, what that could look like. And so
high yields in terms of the diseases that people are so concerned about, from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's to other
and
neurodegenerative diseases.
We hear so much about stem cell therapies that could be promising in these areas. And so if successful, this could be a first step towards treating some of those diseases.
You know, we've got so many exciting things on the horizon. AI, we've talked about, certainly CRISPR technology. Mm-hmm. But these GLP-1 drugs, I think, are every day we're hearing a new discovery validated. How is that impacting the work that you do? Because there's such a transformation going on in that industry.
Yeah.
What's the crosswalk back to your internal thinking and the priorities that you're developing?
So a very crowded area right now, right?
Yeah.
GLPs. But what's interesting about it, I'm sure you're also tracking, is like the massive supply chain issues that are associated with it, right? The demand is
immediately. They can't produce enough of the medicine.
That's right.
To deal with the needs.
Right. That's right. And
nobody comes off it for long periods of time. So just have
a huge consumption. Well, is there an improvement in the making of the drugs, the process there?
Right. You know? And just broadly, right? So we run into challenges in supply chain. GLP-1s is just one of them, but also, many other drugs, we face these challenges. And so that just this year, we're launching a new office called Scalable Solutions Office. And this is really focused on, being able to manufacture at scale in a cost-effective way, in a predictable way, that we're not, subject to these supply chain issues so often. And then also reaching all Americans at scale. So how do you get those drugs, those diagnostics into the places where they need to be, whether it's a rural setting, whether it's into a pediatric population or a geriatric population. Each of those presents its own unique last mile challenge that we think is really, really ripe for innovation. And the leader that we brought in for that office, we don't even have program managers there yet, is Jason Roos. And he came from Operation Warp Speed, which became H-Corps at HHS. Right. And then he was also worked really closely with the Postmaster General on the project that delivered antigen tests to all of us. So we can just get online and over the course of 4 weeks, deliver, I think it was 6 million tests.
That was pretty amazing.
Right. Yeah. And what non-traditional thinking there.
Right.
And so we want more of that for healthcare as we move forward and not to have to do that only in the moment of crisis, right? How do we have that be just a regular way that we can start to deliver care to all Americans, since we are a massive country? Not all of us are really close to healthcare.
Well, you have such an obvious level of optimism about this work. We know it's only been 9 months. The agency's only 2 years old. Biggest surprise so far? What did you not expect?
I've been just delighted with the caliber of the talent that we've been able to bring into the agency, from the program managers to our contracting team that meet the level of creativity of our program managers. Many of them have never been in government and have these big ideas but would have no idea how to execute that. I've also been very excited that they're all willing to be vaccinated with antibodies against bureaucracy. So we look for ways.
Vaccine available.
I am handing it out, so come get your dose. But that is, we're really, I'm trying to coach them to be as creative as possible, but also, there's a way federal government has done things for a very long time. It doesn't mean it's the right way. Maybe there's a new way that we can try. Maybe it doesn't need to be 30 steps. Maybe we can do it in 3 steps. And so looking for ways not to cut corners, to keep quality safety, everything a top priority, but are there other ways that we can tackle this problem in a more effective way.
Renee, the last time we were together, I asked you about building bipartisan relationship, and you were working very hard, as hard as you are on the science. How's that going? Do we have the seam of opportunity to bring people together? And give us some updates on that.
Well, so after you and I talked last year, actually I have a really concrete story. It involves Aspen. So I had my panel last year after our conversation, and I saw Alex Azar in the audience. And so, of course, I was appointed by President Biden, and Alex Azar was in our last administration. And he was actually, when I saw him during the panel, I just clocked, okay, there he is. He was actually very against ARPA-H. And so
That was the biggest surprise.
Well, but afterwards, he listened to the panel, and we bumped into each other just walking on campus here. And he said, you converted me because I can see the path forward and how you're going to do business differently. And so this year we hosted a panel together. So he brought us together. Isn't that wonderful?
Absolutely.
And it's so important. And what I've learned I think this, and I inherently knew, this is not a surprise. All of us are impacted by something in health that impacts us personally, whether it's our own disease, our child's disease, a parent's disease, a loved one. Our business is impacted by health. And so you could just look for that common ground and have a conversation about what are we going to do about that together. I'm so optimistic. Everybody asks, this is election year, what's going to happen to ARPA-H? I'm like, we're going to continue, you know, keep our heads down, do the good work. And I haven't met a member yet that is opposed to the work
that
we're doing.
It helps and all
Americans. Super. Yes, right. Absolutely. That's what we're here for.
So what are you doing to get the word out across the country? Because you've zeroed in on so many compelling things, the pure science of tackling things like the neurodegenerative diseases, focusing on populations who specifically are much more at risk, trying to do things in a different way, find that creative, intellectually curious scientist in the making out there. How are people keeping up with you? What they what should they be watching, following, reading? Do you have your own podcast?
Tell everybody about that. We have ARPA-H Vitals is our newsletter. And so really encourage folks to join. We have a wonderful website that we update all the time. So really on a daily basis, we're even updating, you know, what's happening in our programs. But ARPA-H Vitals is you can go to website, sign up, and it's every 2 weeks we just, what's the latest and greatest? Not only what are the due dates of things to submit to, but also, you know, here's a new program, here's a new program manager, or here's where we're going to be in the country. Come meet us and learn a little bit about us.
And you're traveling around the country?
All the time, yes.
Great.
So, yeah, next program is cloning me and our program managers and then not needing to sleep, I think, is what's needed.
Let us know when you've solved that problem.
Right.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for joining us today. Congratulations on all the work that the team at ARPA-H is doing. It is such an exciting program, so exciting for all Americans. And we look forward to seeing you next year to get another update. To all of our listeners, thanks so much for joining us. You can follow us on CHC Radio. And Renee, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Truly exciting. Always to see you.
We're
9 months.
We're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Absolutely. Yes. We'll be following you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.